In the church where I pastor, we've been spending a lot of time talking about intimacy with God. And to be quite honest with you, yeah, it was a sermon series, but it was a spiritual journey for me personally. Because, you know, if you're going to talk about intimacy with God, it helps to have intimacy with God a little bit, at least. And so it was kind of a spiritual journey for me. And God really taught me a lot of things. And what I want to share with you tonight, just one of the things that God taught me through this recent study. One of the things God was showing me is that really in our spiritual lives, we live on a continuum, a line. And on one end is what we call self-sufficiency. We're sufficient in and of ourselves. We're doing our own thing. We're content. On the other end is God's sufficiency. And those two are mutually exclusive. They really are on both ends of the line. And the closer we move toward God's sufficiency, the closer and more intimate our walk with God becomes. The more intimate and rich our prayer life is, the more we hunger for the Word of God, the more we sense His power surging through our lives, and we're giving a bold witness that God's moving in our lives. And the closer we move toward self-sufficiency, we're finding what we like and our happiness and our contentment and joy out of what we control and what we own and what we possess, and how our grades are doing, or how our relationships are going, or how our people around us are liking us, and that sort of thing. And as long as all those things are happening the way we like them, then man, life is good. The minute those things stop happening the way we like for them to go, then we get angry and frustrated and irritable. I know that would never happen to any of you, but it happens to me. And we get all bent out of shape. Why? Because we're really living in the realm of the self-sufficient. Now, having that in your mind, we fluctuate in our Christian life somewhere between the two, right? I mean, sometimes we vacillate kind of between God's sufficiency and self-sufficiency and back and forth. But if we're really gut level honest, I mean, you know, if we could really be honest with ourselves, we'd say that we live the majority of our life closer to the realm of the self-sufficient than we do the God-sufficient. We spend most of our time finding our happiness and contentment in our network of friends or the wards that we have, or being comfortable, being settled, having a plan. And you know what? If you don't believe that, just ask yourself the question, why is it that it's so hard for me to spend quality time in prayer? Why is it that I have a hard time really hungering after God's Word and devouring it and eating it up in my life? Why is it that I'm so easily worried, so easily set off, you know, and lose my temper? I'm so easily jealous or envious of another person because they've got what I want. Why is that? The reason is because we're living most of our lives in the realm of the self-sufficient. And there is like, because of how we're made, because we're humans, because we have this sin nature, this flesh, i.e. Romans 5 and 6, you know, that kind of thing going on in our lives, there's like a gravitational pull to pull us toward the self-sufficient and to become comfortable and reliant and self-sufficient, so much so that we don't even know we're there. We don't even know that we're really self-sufficient. We don't really know that we need God because everything is rolling right along until something drops, until something happens that's outside what we want. But, you know, In the fact that there is this gravitational pull, there are some things that bump us toward God's sufficiency. One thing that bumps us toward God's sufficiency is external crisis. All right? You may be cruising along fine in your self-sufficient world, and all of a sudden, crisis hits your life, and I've seen it more times than I care to mention. We start going back to God, don't we? You know, our parents say we're getting a divorce. We have a good friend that gets sick or dies tragically. We have a relationship that breaks off. We fail out a semester. We get kicked out of school. We wreck the car, you know. And all of a sudden, you know, we're crying out, oh God, you know, I realized maybe I wasn't in control. Maybe I really wasn't following you, God. I'm going to do better this time. And we cry out to God, kind of like the Israelites did. They'd ran this cycle multiple times, right? And so they would run back to God. God, save us, restore us, whatever. And God would do that. He would step in and He would, you know, pull them out of exile or pull them away from their enemies and reestablish them. And then they would get back in the good graces and back where things ought to be. And what do? Thanks, God. Appreciate that. I'm back now in my realm of self-sufficiency. And so this crisis tends to bump us toward seeking after God. But let me tell you, there's one other thing that moves us toward that. And the other thing that moves us towards seeking God out of the realm of the gravitational pull of self-sufficient and moving toward intimacy with God is what I call an internal emptiness. An internal emptiness. And it's about that internal emptiness that I want to talk about tonight. It's an emptiness that says there's got to be more to living than this. There's got to be more to walking with God. There's got to be more to life than just jumping through the hoops that people have set out for me. And it's that internal emptiness, that longing for more, that moves many unbelievers to seek God. Because, man, they've accomplished it all. They've done what they want. And yet they're empty on the inside. And so they pursue God. But it's also that internal emptiness that plagues many believers. And quite honestly, in a group this size, is going to plague many of you. And it plagues those believers, and I want you to listen to this, it plagues those believers that spend their time doing so much for God that they really find that they're too busy to know God very well. We're so busy doing so much for God, we're going through the motions. I tell you what, I can't say how many times I have breakfast with men quite regularly. And when I sit down across the table at 6, 7 a.m. or 6:30 at Denny's, you know, with the guy, and I'm saying, tell me about your spiritual life. And he'll look at me in the eyes and he'll say, I don't know what it is, but man, I'm going through a spiritual drought. I mean, I'm giving, I'm teaching, I'm witnessing, I'm having my quiet time, but there's something about it, man. I'm just not clicking. I'm just not connecting with God. I'm in a spiritual slump. Anybody ever said that in this room? I'm in a spiritual slump. Okay, let's just have a confession time. Okay, this is confession time. Ready? Anybody ever say, I'm in a spiritual slump? Raise your hand. Oh, I'm so glad I'm in good company. Yeah, I mean, we've been there, right? You may be there right now. And, I mean, these guys, they're saying, man, I'm really struggling. And, I mean, it doesn't just happen once or twice. It's time after time after time. And I'm asking the question, why is that so prevalent? Why is that so frequent that we're always finding ourselves in this spiritual drought, saying, man, there's got to be more. There's got to be more. I don't know, maybe it's the gifts that God gives us. Maybe it's the pace of ministry. Maybe it's the busyness of our lives. Maybe it's all the stuff that we got to deal with. But somehow, the passion for God just gets suffocated in the midst of all that. There was just like one pastor that confessed with tears running down his face. He said this. He said, nobody around me knows it, but I'm operating on fumes. He said, I'm lonely, I'm hollow, I'm shallow, I'm enslaved in a schedule that never lets up. And that may be you. Nobody may know it, but you may right now be operating on spiritual fumes with a pace and a schedule that's not letting up. And everything looks good on the outside, but inside you're not doing well and you know it. If that's you, you're in good company. Joseph Stoll, I had an opportunity with a few other guys to spend some time with Joseph Stoll. He's the president of Moody Bible Institute. This was a couple of weeks ago. And Stoll makes a comment in a book that he wrote. And I want to just read it to you because, man, it just, boom, it jumped off the page to me. Listen to what he said. He said, while I have given Him, that is Christ, the best years of my life and have maximized my energies for Him, I have found that busyness for Him has not drawn me closer to Him. In fact, in some ways, it creates a false and treacherous sense of spirituality. It causes one to assume that spirituality is a performance and that intimacy with God is a business arrangement. And listen, it creates a flat, dull
sort of Christianity that begins to turn our hearts cold and even sour if we're not careful. Let me ask you a question. Honestly, God looking at your heart, maybe you're walking through some of that right now. That there really is a flatness, a coldness, a drought in your life spiritually. You're going through the motions. You're here. But man, internally, something's not happening. I want to talk about that. What is that? How do we deal with that? How do we get off the flat, the dull, and really find joy and power and satisfaction in knowing God? In order to continue, I want to back up for a minute and just say this. I want to talk for a minute. What is it about us that was created to know God and that longs to know Him that way? What is it that God has put in us that longs to know Him and that is only satisfied in Him? And when it's not, there's this drought feeling, there's this empty feeling, there's this longing feeling. The Bible speaks about it all the way through. In fact, we sang a lot about it tonight. When the Bible talks about this internal longing for God, it talks about the soul. Soul. And there's a lot of confusing talk about the soul out there these days. A lot of confusion, conflicting teaching about it. But I don't want to get into the depths of it tonight, but I do want to touch on it. Very simply, the Bible teaches that each person is comprised of two elements, two aspects, a body and a soul. For instance, you might just want to jot down on the side Genesis 2:7. Genesis 2:7 says this, "And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and he became a living soul." First time the word soul appears in the Bible. And get it, he forms Adam out of the dust of the ground, gets the body, but it's inanimate, it's dead, it's lifeless, it's form only. And then he says he breathes into his nostrils the breath of life, and he becomes a living soul. In other words, at that moment, Adam comes to life and he possesses then a soul. In fact, in Mark, the word soul, Mark 8, the word soul is also translated life. And so that soul that is in you is what is living about you, you see. It is that which gives you life. And the soul is the living part of us. And when a person dies, their soul doesn't die. Their soul leaves their body, and their body is like it was at the beginning. Just an empty, empty shell. But your soul lives on. And that soul is that eternal part of you that will either live eternally with God in heaven or separate eternally from God in hell. In fact, 1 Kings 17:21, Elijah's praying over this dead boy. This boy got sick and died. You remember the story. And he runs and he prays this prayer. He says, "Oh Lord, my God, let this child's soul come back to him." It's as if the soul had already departed and he was praying, "God, send the soul back." And so basically when we talk about the soul, we're talking about the internal you that was created to live with God for eternity. The part of you that God created that he breathed in to our lives that has a longing for God, a knowing of God, and that was designed to live with God eternally. And it's that part of you that is extremely, extremely valuable. Remember what Jesus said? He said, "What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world, but he loses his what? His soul." Because that is the most valuable part of you. It encompasses your personality. It encompasses your thoughts, your emotions, your will, your spirit. I mean, everything that's the real you. That soul. And listen, it is that soul that was created to know God. And it was that soul that was created to delight in God. And it's that soul that was created and designed to live with God forever. Our soul. You know, there's a lot of talk about the soul recently. Up to about 10 years ago, nobody wanted to talk about the soul. I mean, no psychologist ever talked about the soul. That was too churchy, you know. Even though, you know, psychology literally means the study of the soul. But we didn't want to talk about the soul. That's too churchy. And even preachers kind of veered away from the soul. It sounded too, you know, old. But there was a book that came out by a guy named Thomas More just a couple of years ago, and it was called Care of the Soul. And when this book came out, it was like igniting a fire in our country. And all of a sudden, because of that book, there are all kinds of seminars and workshops and books and tapes all on the soul. Now, I'm not promoting this book, all right? This book is a godless book. It really moves us towards self-sufficiency, not toward God's sufficiency. But what it did was, the Dallas Morning News said it struck a national nerve that we've been neglecting a soul consciousness. And we got to recapture that. Before our country was off on the soul fad, folks, the Bible talked about it, right? The Bible gave us the answer. In fact, in Psalm 62, it says, "My soul finds rest in God alone." In God alone. It goes on to say, "My salvation comes from Him. He alone is my rock and my salvation." In other words, what the Bible has said is that only in God is a soul satisfied, is our internal longings complete and satisfied. Only in God. And when the Bible talks about our soul, when it talks about why our soul is restless, when it talks about how our soul is satisfied, what is going to cause us to be more intimate with God, it gives us three word pictures. And I want to walk you through those word pictures. And we're going to be flipping through a lot of verses here, so get ready. The first word picture is found in Psalm 42. So you can just flip over there. This is a verse that you're going to know really well when you get there, if you don't already know it already. Psalm 42. But I want you to get the word picture. Psalm 42, verse 1. "As the deer pants for the streams of water, so my soul..." You want to circle that. "So my soul pants for you, O God." Here it comes again, verse 2. "My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When can I go and meet with God?" You know, I love springtime. And one of the reasons why I love springtime is I love spring training. One of my greatest memories of high school West Texas football was spring training. Because you put the last season behind you. You'd worked out hard on weights in the summer. You were probably as cut as you were going to be, you know. And everybody's got bragging rights about how you're going to be the next year. And so you get your pads back out and you get out, the grass is cut fresh. And I mean, you're going at it. And you're popping the skin, you know. And I mean, I would just love it. And everybody's vying for positions for next fall's lineup. And I'll never forget, we'd go out there and they would give us these little, they don't do this anymore, but they give us these little yellow tablets to eat. And they were salt tablets, hopefully get the cramps out and cause you to drink lots and lots and lots of water. Same thing I saw happen out on the ranch out in the West Texas area. They would, many times farmers would go out and they would drop out these big salt blocks. I don't know if y'all know anything about that. Big salt blocks, and the cows would come up and lick it. And ladies, it's a beautiful sight, an absolutely beautiful sight. Cows would lick that thing, and then they would just drink all kinds of water. Well, it's like what the Bible says, is that God has put something in us like that. He's planted something in us called our soul that thirsts after God, that longs after Him, that desires Him more than anything else, that there's this insatiable, incredible thirst that longs for God. That is what He placed in us, and that is our soul. In fact, we sang this tonight. Psalm 63 says, "O God, You are my God. Earnestly I will seek You. My soul thirsts for You. My body longs for You in a dry and weary land where there's no water. My soul will be satisfied as with the richest of foods. With the singing of lips, my mouth will utter praise." In other words, the psalmist knew what the neo-spiritualists today don't know, and that is our soul only is satisfied in God. What your soul longs for, what it desires for, what it aches for, is for God. The deepest needs of our lives are found in Him. Just think about it. Psalm 34 says our soul will rejoice in God. The 23rd Psalm says that God restores my soul. Jeremiah 6 says that our soul only find rest in God. We're talking restoration. We're talking relief. We're talking replenishment. We're talking rejoicing. And all of this is found when our soul connects with God. And I look at that and I said, okay, I know that. I can see that. But you know what kept getting me? Here I am talking with myself. And I said, okay, Craig, you're telling me my soul only desires God. Yes, that's right. Then answer me this question. Okay, what is it? Why is it that if my soul only longs for God and I was created only to know God and the deepest needs and longings of my life are only fulfilled in Him and replenished in Him, then why is it that I can go days, weeks, months and not desire Him? Why is it, if that's true, why is it that I can go for long periods of time and not desire the Word, long periods of time and never pray, long periods of time and just go through motions and there's not even an aching, there's not even a wanting to be with God? I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but it happens to me. Why is that? And I think that's a question that needs to be answered. Well, to answer that question, we got to go to the second word picture. The first word picture is a deer panting after the water, only finding its satisfaction in the brook. Our hearts and souls pant after God. Why is it that we don't run after Him? The reason why is found in Jeremiah chapter 2. So just flip over to Jeremiah chapter 2. But Jeremiah was called to speak for God in a time that was very difficult. The Israelites were incredibly rebellious. They were in spiritual ruin. They had followed God for a time, and now they were captivated with foreign gods, with cultic rituals around them, and they had long lost a passion for God. I mean, these guys had run full stride, headlong, dead ahead into the realm of the self-sufficient at this point when Jeremiah comes on the scene. And God calls us to Jeremiah, you're going to be my spokesman for these self-sufficient people that have no desire for me. And this is what Jeremiah says. Look at verse 13. He said, my people, this is God speaking, have committed two sins. They have, number one, forsaken me, the spring of living water. And number two, they have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. In other words, what he was saying at the time, you know, many times they wouldn't have a regular water supply, and they would have cisterns that they would create out of clay and put and to catch the runoff water that would come off in the rainwater off the roof. Or they would hone out in the ground some water and they would collect water that way. And those were cisterns. And he said, here's the most graphic image. And of course, that doesn't really translate to us when we read, okay, great, what's that all about? But back then, man, it was confrontation. He said, you know what you guys are like? You guys that are running off to these foreign gods, you know what you're like? He said, it's like a stream of water that has everything that you need. It's clear, it's running, it comes from the mountain, it will never stop, it is full to the brim. And he said, you have not only turned your back on that kind of water, and I'm that God, I'm the God that can supply all of your need, I'm the God that can provide everything that you want, I'm the satisfaction of your soul. And he said, you have turned your back on me, and then you have gone and stuck your face in a hole in the ground. That's what you've done. You have pursued muddy, dirty, putrefied water. You're licking up water that ran off your roof. When I want to give you refreshment. You know why he said that? He said because all of a sudden there was something in these Israelite young men and women about your age, about my age, that wanted to just break out from the rules and the regulations and live out what these Canaanite people were living out. You know, I mean, they had these idol worships and they had all these wild parties and they had all these forbidden things that Moses said no and the law said no and nobody was supposed to do. And they were being enticed to do the forbidden, enticed to go in, enticed to hang out and enticed to hang with this crowd, enticed to do all this stuff. And they were pursuing it. And he said, you are leaving me to pursue something that is worthless. In fact, he went on to say this. He went on to say, verse 5, back up to verse 5, he said, they follow worthless idols and they became worthless themselves. You know what happened? They pursued those things so long that their inner hearts became empty, worthless, and they couldn't feel anymore. They couldn't even feel conviction anymore. They were so into the stuff around them. You know what? It's possible for you to so pursue the things of the Canaanites that you so run after them and you so seek those things to find satisfaction and meaning and purpose and significance in your life that you can lose a hunger for God. You know, one of the things, when I was in college, my mother would call me up every once in a while and she would say the words that I longed to hear. Honey, come home, I fixed your favorite meal. And I would say, Mom, I'll be there in a heartbeat. And sometimes she would call me up and she'd say, Craig, what would you like to eat? And I would give her the whole run. Mine, I want the roast that you cooked on Sunday afternoon. I want the mashed potatoes that pile up on top of the plate. I want the strawberry cake in three layers. I mean, I had the menu. And she would say, honey, I'm going to make it all for you. It's going to be piping hot. Come on, you know. And so I'm like, woo, here we go. So I'm headed down, man, I'm going home. And I can remember I would walk in the door and that smell would hit my nose. And I'm like, and she would say, come to the table. And I would say, yes. And I would be drawn as if floating in the air. And she would say, here is your favorite chair. Here is your favorite plate. And I would sit down and she would say, here's your favorite fork. And and she would have it all laid out, you know. And I mean, she would just love to just give it to me, you know. And say, honey, don't you want a third helping, you know. And I'm like, oh, Mom, this is the ultimate. Now, picture this happening. She calls me up. She says the words I want to hear. Honey, what do you want for supper? And I tell her the whole menu. We do the whole thing. And same play. Pull in the driveway. She comes in. Come. And I come in through the door. We sit in, fork, plate, chair, the whole bit. And then I get there and I look at her. And instead of saying, oh, this is awesome, what I look at her and I say, Mom, I'm really not very hungry. And she's going, what do you mean you're not hungry? Well, you see, I was really hungry on the way down here thinking about this whole spread. And so I stopped off at 7-Eleven, got a big old wad of Spam. And I've been just chug-a-lugging this Spam for the last 20 minutes. And, I mean, it looks great, Mom, but I just haven't got a want for that. Now, listen. The point is, God has got a feast for you. To know Him, to be satisfied in Him. And He created you to desire Him. But maybe the reason why you don't hunger after Him is because you've been cramming your spiritual life with a bunch of junk. The fact is that we don't hunger after God not because He is unsavory to us. It's the fact that we have stuffed ourselves with the things of the Canaanites. And you know the gut level honest truth? If I go a week or if I go 3 or 4 days and I don't have a hunger and a longing for God, it's because there is something wrong in me that I'm pursuing other things and I'm losing my appetite for Him. Let me ask you something. How's your appetite for God? Are you really hungering after Him? You know, maybe you'd say, Craig, man, I wish I could. I wish I want to. But I just don't know how to get there. Let me give you the third picture. The first one, the panting deer that pursues the brook that can satisfy. The second picture is that Israelite with their face in the mud drinking up something that doesn't satisfy them. The third picture. It's what I call a call from the market. And that's in Isaiah 55. A call from the market. Like Jeremiah, Isaiah was called out to a religious but empty people who turned their back on God. And Isaiah says these words in Isaiah 55, verse 1, and I can picture it. He really sounds more like a carnival caller than a preacher. You know, if you've ever been down to the carnival or to the fair, you see these guys standing there saying, hey, come over here, come over to our ride, you know, come do our thing, you know, and they're calling out. And really, Isaiah sounds a lot like that. But I want you to listen to what he says. Listen to his message, because it's life-changing. He says, come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come and buy and eat. And come, buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen to me. I mean, can you hear him? Listen to me and eat what is food, and your soul will delight in the richest affair. Give ear and come to me and hear me, that your soul may live, you see. He said, listen. What Isaiah was saying is, listen, you got to come. You got to come to me. Come back to God. And he said, I'll give you a drink. Come back to me and I'll satisfy you. Come back to me. And I think really what Isaiah was saying is, listen to this. He was saying, it's not too late for you to come back. It's not too late for you to say, listen, I've had it with this stuff. I've had it with not hungering after God. And saying, God, the reality is, I am where I am. But God, I want to want you. It's not too late. In fact, about 700 years after Isaiah said those words, there was another man who stood in a busy crowd. And he stood in a crowd of religious people. Not in a market. In the religion, it was in the temple. Religious people. And they were doing very religious things. And there were some rushing off to class because they had an exam. And there were some that were rushing back to their dorm room to get ready for a date. And there were some that were rushing off to hang out with the guys and to shoot some pool. And there were some that were rushing off to a Bible study. And there were some that were rushing off to an instrumental practice because they had to lead worship. And they had some that were rushing off to church to do their thing. And there was all this busyness all around him. And Jesus stood up in the midst of that busy religiousness. And you know what he said? He said these words, if a man is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. And whosoever believes in me, as the scripture says, streams of living water will flow up from within him. What Jesus said is, listen, if you're thirsty, you religious, busy, empty people, if you're thirsty, come to me. Come to me. Come to me. And I'll fill you up. I will fill you. You don't have to be full to come. You have to be empty to come. And let me fill you. You know what the last beckoning call of the Bible is in Revelation 21? It says the Spirit and the Bride says come. And whoever will, whoever is thirsty, let him come and take the water of life. Listen, the message is a call that says come. It's not too late. I don't know really where you are. You may say, well, what can I do to come? Let me give you just, in Isaiah, we were in Isaiah 55. Let me just give you a couple of thoughts. Look at verse 6. It says, seek the Lord while he may be found and call on him while he is near. First thing you got to do is you got to seek God and you got to call on him. Chances are there are many of you that you're really not where you need to be spiritually. And God is saying, will you call on me and will you seek me right now? Seeking him, calling him. Second thing, look at what it says in verse 7. Forsaking the substitutes, lest the wicked forsake his way and the evil man his thoughts. Just get it out. Just forsake. Say, God, I don't want to pursue those things anymore. And then he says, look. Let him turn to the Lord. And he will have mercy on him. and to our God, and He will freely pardon. Let me just ask you a question. What is it going to take in your life for you to get to a point where you're willing to seek God and to call out to Him and to forsake some of these substitutes that you're stuffing your life with and to say, God, I want to want You. I want to know You. I don't know what it's going to take for you. But I know there's something that resounds in me when I hear those words again. It says, God, I want to say that. I really do want to want You and to know You and to walk with You intimately and to be satisfied and refreshed and rejoice in You again. Would you bow your heads with me? I don't really know what we need to do to wrap this up, but I do know this. When God speaks a word like come, and when He says, don't rush off to the other things, I know we got to take that word seriously, folks. And quite honestly, there's some folks here, as I'm just sensing, by God's Spirit, there are some folks that really need to be honest with God and say, God, my desire for You and my longing for You and my passion for You is dry. It's an old Keith Green song that said, my eyes are dry, my heart is cold. And He said, that's not where I want to be. I want to be alive to You and dead to me. But what can be done for an old heart like mine? Soften it up with oil and wine. The oil is You, Your Spirit of love. Wash me anew in the wine of Your blood. Maybe you can just say, God, I want to know You. And I'm coming with an empty heart. Say, Lord, fill me again. Refresh me again. You know, Peter said in Acts, he said, turn to the Lord that times of refreshing may come.